on KLYT. This is ABQ Connect.
Welcome into ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you today, and so much appreciate you joining us. I hope you had a great weekend. Our good friend and general manager, Steve Ryman, will be with you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this week. And I'm joined in studio by a longtime friend of mine and somebody who's really involved in New Mexico, and his name is Jeff Apodaca.
Good morning, Jim.
How are you?
Good, good.
Jeff,
I guess afternoon, sorry.
Can I start with this?
Probably.
You love New Mexico.
Not at all.
You've come back.
Absolutely.
You go away and then you come back.
Absolutely. I was gone for 27 years. Oh, no, I love New Mexico. 15th generation. Grew up here, in Las Cruces and Santa Fe, a combination.
Yeah.
This is what I tell people. I said, I grew up in Cruces. I matured in Santa Fe. Because when, as you know, I ran for governor in 2018 back then. And so on the campaign trail, my Cruces buddies, who I'm still very close with, would get upset when I tell people I'm from Santa Fe. Because, I did spend 11 years of my life in Las Cruces, and
yes.
I spend my forming years, my developing years in Santa Fe, at Santa Fe High. So I finally started saying, okay, I grew up in Cruces, I matured in Santa Fe.
I love that.
Yeah.
Jeff, former football player, former University of New Mexico Lobo. You've been through some stuff, my friend. You're a cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm. 45 years.
You already mentioned you ran for governor. Is it devastating when you run for an office like that and you don't win? Or is it just like, hey, God's telling me I need to do something else?
Well, I felt like God was calling me to run. God has always kind of opened up doors for me. I've always kind of said God has always opened up doors for me, and so I just follow those doors. When I come to a decision I have to make in life, I pray about it, meditate about it, and then really, as we always say, just leave it in God's hands. It's kind of always worked out for me because God's always kind of opened up the doors. And when I get frustrated in life, as we all do, when I get frustrated in life that things aren't going well, it's amazing how that door is actually closing and God opens up another door for me. And so I felt like it was, I don't want to say calling. The way I look at life is I want life to matter. Mm-hmm. So I have kind of a slogan, like, I want life to matter. I look at God, family, friends. You keep that in perspective. Pretty much everything else has worked out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I look at whether it's in business, whether it's my personal life, my family, whatever, I look at the greater good. What's best for the greater good? I don't look what's that best for me. I don't look what's best. Again, and maybe it's because of the way my parents brought us up, but also maybe because I play sports, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was always, as you know, I was in high school or college. I mean, I was never the superstar in college, but I started and played.
Well, let me tell you, you have a blue trophy as a state champion at Santa Fe High School. Have they had one since?
No. We had a 30-year reunion a few years back. According to the Santa Fe New Mexican, we're the only big school north of Albuquerque to ever win a state championship in football or in basketball.
Yeah. Wow.
And so, I've always looked at it, what's best for the team, what's best for the greater good, right?
Yes.
So when I built companies for CBS Sports or CBS Entertainment or AOL or Univision for 16 years, people loved working for me because I looked out for the team. What's best for the team, not what's best for Jeff, not what's best, it's always what's best for the company, what's best for the clients, what's best for this. And then what I do is I just have this knack of finding better ways to do it, and then I simplify it.
So and by the way, I think it's my impression that you do that in a very nonpartisan way, very common sense way.
Oh, absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. And I think that's growing up in politics here, I'm a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But in the old days, they called us Blue Dog Democrats, or my dad used to call us JFK Democrats. It's funny because my dad was known as probably the most progressive governor the state has ever seen. Well, 50 years ago, progressive meant moving things forward and getting things done.
Yeah.
Today, progressive is a whole different term.
It is.
And
yeah.
I've been very fortunate where I kind of, I'm a problem solver and I find opportunities. And so this water shortage that we're going to talk about, I don't know if you want to get into it right off the bat.
Yeah. Well, so I think most of our listeners know that Elephant Butte is very close to empty.
I talked to someone literally this weekend. Actually on Friday, and they told me they were down there, and they told me it was because the video that prompted my op-ed.
Mm-hmm.
They told me that they have a house down there, and they said the lake is now at 0.08%, so less than 1%. When the video came out that I saw back in June, what prompted me to write an op-ed about my white paper, which I've been pitching for 10 years, by the way, 16 years now, to be honest with you. What prompted that was the video said, and I sent you the video, said elephant butte's at 9%, and with evaporation and lack of rain and the lack of snowpack, it'll be at less than 2% by the end of August.
Right.
Well, it's already at 0.8 or 0.9, they said. And I'm trying to explain, even all the rains we're getting right now, they're holding some water up north, which they need to, some of the reservoirs. But the trickles we're seeing in the Rio Grande right now will evaporate before it gets down to Elephant Butte. So it's not even going to help refurbish that.
What's interesting about your proposal, you've done some research about in Texas, they're putting together desalination plants. They have a bunch of them.
53.
And
when I ran for governor 8 years ago, it was 16.
Wow.
So they've developed over 40 in the last 8 years.
And so they're able to take advantage of produced water from their oil wells and other kinds of sources that are in brine pools. Brine pool being like a lot of salt, a lot of minerals.
It's about 75% brine. Again, keep in mind, let's go to the very first step. And the reason Texas is doing it, and Texas is number two, you know, we're number one in a lot of bad scenarios.
Yeah.
You know, we're 50th in a lot of things that we need to be one in, and we're number one in a lot of bad things. But one of the things we're number one in is oil production, which my op-ed does not say, which I didn't want to go into detail too much. But the oil guys, you know, bring up oil and gas, you know, through their processing, and they're developing 31 billions of gallons of water a year. And, you know, just so you'll know, the state of New Mexico uses about $1 trillion a gallon, uses 975 billion gallons of water a year. That's our water usage.
Mm-hmm.
Oil and gas guys are producing about 31 billion of brackish water. Okay. We have enough. And another thing New Mexico has, we have 14 of the largest aquifers in the world. Texas is number two. Texas has 4. Arizona is number 3. Arizona has 2. We have 14.
Wow. And aquifer being basically an underground lake. Underneath Albuquerque.
Underground lake. And keep in mind, whether you believe it or not, you know, there's science there. New Mexico used to be under ocean. Okay, let's just be very frank. So the brackish water is because it's ocean water. Mm-hmm. It's been underground for years. And so what I don't want to confuse people is there's two sources of water in New Mexico. And that's why you have the farmers, which use 75% of our water. They have many of them spend millions of dollars going into wells because they can't afford they can't trust on the Rio Grande anymore. And so there's two ways we get fresh water in New Mexico. It's our aquifers, which are fresh water, which come from rain and snow. Okay. And then the Rio Grande, right? And you got the Pecos River down the east side of the state, and those are underground aquifers that go all the way under even Carlsbad. Right, go Carlsbad Caverns, and so those are the resources, and so we rely on snowpack from the Rio Grande, which fills up 3 or 4 aquifers all the way down to the Elephant Butte, and the video says, and to be honest with you, I didn't know about this, but the video says that Elephant Butte was built in 1901, I think the video said something.
Mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was the largest reservoir in the North America. Back in the early 1900s, it was built to hold water for the Southwest, for Texas, New Mexico, and all that, and our water packs. So we have that. Those are our two resources of water, and it's all fresh water. And then we have aquifers, the freshwater aquifers. And those aquifers, and scientists may argue with me, but I've talked to many scientists. And by the way, when I'm talking about scientists, I'm talking about New Mexico Tech, New Mexico State.
Sure.
Alamogordo Desalination Research Institute. Mm-hmm. Like Alamogordo, we literally have a desalination institute. Ooh,
wow, I didn't know that.
That we're doing research for 15, 20 years. And we have a small desalination testing plant down there. We're done doing research. Let's stop doing research.
We know what to do.
And so New Mexico Tech, New Mexico State, UTEP are telling me, and this is an updated report. I've known this for years, but this is an updated report from 23, so 3 years old. There are 14 aquifers down there. If you take basically half of the production of what we use, right? So if you pump up that water, clean it, desalinate it, clean it up, half of the water that we're using today, if we produce just that, right, there's enough brackish water down there that would last us 1,280 years.
Just half.
Just if we just took half, half of what we're using today. And so again, well over 1,000 years. And there's pros and cons about it. But my point is, whether you believe in climate change, whatever you believe in, let me make this very clear to you. I've talked to scientists. I've talked to Sandia Labs. I've talked to Los Alamos. I've talked to New Mexico Tech. I've talked to MIT. Texas West, the Southwest and the Northwest, is in a 100-year drought. Mm. For whatever reason. You can argue why.
Sure.
For whatever reason. We're in a 100-year drought. Jim, the experts are saying we're in year 16.
Wow.
So we got 84 more years of this. And nothing's – I mean, right now – our legislators are, and there's some legislators. George Munoz sponsored a bill. Michelle's behind it. Let's do some more research. I'm just saying we're done doing research. The state put $40 million into a fund to do more research about can we bring this brackish water up? And there's many ways we can use it. And so my point is we literally sit, folks, on over $86 billion in the state of New Mexico. We have $76 billion in our investment funds, 90% of it from oil and gas over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, when I ran for governor in 18, I made an issue about this. Like 99.98% of that money is being invested outside New Mexico. We invest nothing here. Now, Michelle's gotten much better. The governor controls the board. Steve Moise moved on. They have a new executive director. He's all for investing in New Mexico. So they've allocated out $1.4 billion of the $76 billion to allocate to New Mexico, but none of it's been deployed. $50 million of it's been deployed.
Wow.
Okay. So there's some early steps, right? But we still need to do more. Then we have another $3 billion in surplus. We don't need to touch that. That's surplus for emergency days, for day-to-day operations. Then we have, thanks to oil and gas, I don't know another time, and I think Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham would probably agree with this. I don't know another time I've ever seen in the history of our state that a sitting governor for 8 years have had billion-dollar surpluses every year because of oil and gas prices. Even Martinez, who was in there for 8 years, I think she had six bad years, right? Where we didn't have surpluses, and she had, two to three good years of surpluses. Michelle's had 8 years of surpluses. So the legislators have put about $3 billion away. The investment fund has gone from $24 billion to $76 billion. So some of it's gone into there, but mostly it's been growth with the stock market and our investments.
So we have these monies in the permanent fund. But you've said already today, none of that has been to this point invested in New Mexico, but that Michelle Lujan Grisham is starting to make some
investments.
They've
allocated out in the last 12, 18 months, they've allocated out through investment funds, what I've been told, is $1.4 billion of that.
Okay.
And only about $50 million of it to date has been deployed.
Got it.
Now, there's some other supercomputers, some other things that might take about $500 million of that. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But what's not being invested is in these type of projects that not only generate economic growth for New Mexico, but part of my proposal is what's west of us? Arizona,
mm-hmm.
Nevada, even Utah, and Southern California.
Yes.
Okay? I lived in California for 20 years. The number one issue, they're running out of water. I was in Phoenix twice this year. Phoenix metropolitan area has grown 3 million people in the last 20 years.
Mm.
And they've pillaged all our youth. And Arizona State is now the largest university in the world with 70,000 students. Half are online. They have gone after the president and three governors have gone after tech companies out of California. So you go to Arizona, Mesa, Tempe, that whole, Phoenix area. You now have Google, Apple. You have all the tech companies moving there. But my point is, Arizona's number one concern in the next 20 years is running out of water.
Well, Jeff, let's take a break and say thank you to our sponsors. We do appreciate them very much. We're a nonprofit, non-commercial station, so we really appreciate all the people that sponsor this ministry. Jeff Apodaca is our gift today. He wrote an op-ed in the Santa Fe New Mexican on the 25th, and it's basically a proposal for our state to consider. That's you, our citizens, our listeners, and the political leadership in this state to consider maybe putting together some desalination plants, and Jeff's taking us all through the numbers today. So we hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back on ABQ Connect right after these messages.
on KLYT. This is ABQ Connect.
We are back on ABQ Connect. I hope you're enjoying your day. We appreciate you listening. And Jeff Apodaca is with us. You may remember a few years ago, Jerry Apodaca Sr. was the governor of the state of New Mexico. And Jeff, you've shared with me all kinds of cool things, your sisters and your brother, the way you were raised. And I think you call it the residence. Mm-hmm. Your dad and mom, they pretty much made you as children talk to everybody that was at the house, and you had people from both sides of the aisle and considering difficulties and problems. And I love your dad. I got to know your dad a little bit. Right. One of the things that was fun is when I was a Lobo basketball player, he was a governor.
Right.
And we
keep in mind, my dad's an alumni and played football
in
the 50s.
That's right. Well, he might not appreciate that dating him that way. Obviously, your dad passed away. Your mom's still around, doing great.
She doesn't care about her age. In September 24th, so what's that, in about 6 weeks? She'll be 92.
Awesome.
And we lost my dad 3 years ago at 89, almost 89. He was a month short of being 89. You know, and my dad lived a wonderful, beautiful life. Let's put it this, I tell people all the time, if I can do 25% of what my dad accomplished in the world, I'm doing okay.
You're doing okay.
My dad made a lot of impact and made a lot of change. Him and my mother have impacted not only New Mexico, but people from around the world tremendously. And so I try to tell people my dad's legacy are the people he opened up doors for and the first people he gave opportunities for, not that he was the first Latino governor in the state of New Mexico or in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, no, amazing accomplishments. Your op-ed in the Santa Fe, New Mexico, on July 25th is called "The Water Shortage of New Mexico Can Be an Opportunity."
Correct.
And you just began to talk about some other markets, Southern California, Arizona, that are in need of water. We obviously have a tremendous need since Elephant Butte Lake is almost empty. Anybody driving to and fro east-west across the Rio Grande can see that there's not much water in there.
No water. It's the lowest I've ever seen.
No, absolutely. I've been here my whole life, and
I've never seen it like that.
I've never seen it.
And
like
I'm from originally from Las Cruces. Unfortunately, I was down in Las Cruces twice in the last 3-4 months for some funerals for family friends that are like my parents' generation, and took my mom down there both times. And where the services were, it was across the Rio Grande Bridge. It's completely dry. Now in Las Cruces, you're sometimes used to seeing that. But during farming season, you never see that because they usually pump out the water, and it's just so dry. They're cutting back. Keep in mind, folks, 75% of water use in New Mexico is for agriculture.
Yeah.
And they're cutting that back. And some of the green chili and pecan guys, the reason they're not having problems with water is 20 years ago, 10 years ago, they spent millions of dollars of their own money to drill wells. And so now we're taking water out of the aquifers. And now, because of a Supreme Court ruling from some past legislators or our past attorney general, not Raul, but the former attorney general before him, sued over our water packs. And so now
we should address that the Rio Grande Compact, which basically included three states and Mexico. That was adopted March 13th of 1938.
And we have to live with those.
And we can't change that?
No. No, all the parties have to agree, and then Congress has to agree.
Okay,
right. So it'd be very difficult. But here's my argument: those compacts are based on snowpack, rainpack, and basically up until this year, because of our former attorney general and the lawsuit they created in other states, we had to give a certain percentage. I think it's like a third to other states. And the Navajo Nation also, and they catch it up north. You can't really get out of those. We then started drilling, and because of this lawsuit, we lost at the Supreme Court. We're now limited on how much drilling we can do for agriculture and bring that water up. Because any water we bring up, we then have to give, the Supreme Court has now ruled, part of that has to be part of the water count of those compacts. My argument is, and I've talked to constitutional lawyers, I've talked to corporate lawyers, my argument is we got this brackish water. None of that's part of the compacts. We're the ones spending money to clean it up and make it chemical free and use that water. That water does not have to be considered towards those compacts. So now we can give some of our fresh water to the compacts that we have to. We have obligations now for over almost 100 years. That's not going to change. It's just too many things to move to change it. And I guarantee you the other states are going to come sue us when they see us going after brackish water and clean it up. But Texas is already doing it, and we're not suing Texas to say, hey, you got brackish water to solve your municipal problems. And so my point is, I've talked to constitutional law. Yeah, there's going to be an argument, but that water is newly produced water that is not tied to the compacts. So that's 100% our water. So once we desalinate it, which the technology is there, once we clean it up out of the chemicals, and those chemicals in the water, literally there's New Mexico-based companies out of UNM, out of New Mexico State, out of Sandia Labs and Los Alamos that have created technology using biochar, algae, different natural elements to clean the chemicals out of it. We separate those chemicals. So there's revenue streams there. And again, Jim, we talked—
And also minerals, right, to a certain degree.
Minerals and stuff like that. So an example of those, calcium, lithium, magnesium, bromine, many different stuff. We know that's the kind of chemicals that are in there. Now, I just mentioned those kind of chemicals and elements. Well, calcium. You use it in cement, and you use it in agriculture and fertilizer. Those are industries we do right here, right now. Lithium.
What you're really talking about now is
lithium make?
Batteries.
Right. And what's the shortage right now?
Oh, huge.
Huge. And so I'm saying is right now, China produces 85% of the lithium. Nevada produces the rest. When Tesla was here looking at building a plant here, and I just moved back in 2010, I say there's no way they're going to build a plant here. Because they're in Northern California. The lithium mines in the United States are in Nevada, 45 minutes from their battery development plant. Because remember the plant we were looking at was battery development? I said, guys, let me tell you about truckers. They're going to bring all the lithium here from Nevada. What are their trucks taking back to the West Coast? Nothing. Truckers don't like
empty trucks.
And so the truck drivers and those industries were against Tesla putting their battery plant here. So my point is, all of a sudden, you know, and now how much percentages? My point is, lithium's in the brackish water. We have technology to separate that out.
So let me clarify this for our listeners and for me. You're not just talking about purifying water. You're now talking about this pile of minerals and other elements
that industries use that now we're—
that's going to be taken out of the water and piled somewhere that can be used.
Exactly. That we can sell. So if you take the water, and I'm just going off today's average prices. Mm-hmm. And by the way, these minerals will be about maybe 20, 30% of the revenue. 75% of the revenue, my proposal is, we sell it to Nevada, to Arizona, and California. They need water. At today's price, it's priced by barrel, but at today's price, and taking half the water we produce, not our fresh water, but the water we produce out of brackish, and we clean it up and just sell the water, for agriculture and for city living, not for drinking, but for city living. And by the way, you can drink it, but let's just say we don't want to use that because environmentalists will complain about the drinking water. Let's just say, okay, we use the fresh water for that. We'll use this other stuff. My point is, you do the numbers at today's pricing. Now, personally, I've asked the gubernatorial candidates, let me quarterback this for you. I guarantee I'll get $5,000 a barrel, not $2,500 a barrel. Mm. But my point is, if we get at today's pricing, that's $655 million of new revenue for the state of New Mexico for the next 500 years.
Wow.
Hey, that's a new revenue stream. And I'm using low prices.
This still allows us to have enough water for our citizens to live.
So my point is, we take 25% of that water and we pump it towards agriculture. 75% of our water today is used by agriculture. So we take 25% of that water, we pump it to Elephant Butte, and that's where we use for agriculture, right? And not just Elephant Butte, but other reservoirs. We then use 25% of it by filling up our reservoirs. And that's going to take 3 to 5 years to get them back up to 80%, like just fill them up. That leaves us 50%. And by the way, we're only talking about producing about 20% of the water we use today. So that's about 50%. We sell that water, just that water that we've cleaned, and you sell it to three Western states that are desperately for water over the next 20 years. You create partnerships with them. You're now generating $655 million. And I'm not even pricing out all these elements we can pull. One of the elements, what's the number one issue in the environment today on the West Coast and in Canada right now? forest fires.
Mm, yeah.
What's the thing they drop in forest fires? Retardant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My understanding, between 25-30% of the brackish water is bromane. Well, that's 30% of fire retardant.
We're going to take a break, Jeff. Jeff, you and I can talk about this for 3 hours.
My point is, Jim, before we go to break, there are revenue streams here. So I'm talking about taking New Mexico money, federal fund grants, and the private sector, invest together, develop 4 industrial desalination plants, and use half the water for us and for the future, and use half the water to sell and make it a commodity and generate $655 million. This program I put together, I white papered out, would literally generate positive revenue and generate new revenue for the state within 3 years.
I love it. Jeff has written an op-ed. It's it can be found in the Santa Fe New Mexican on the July 25th issue. It's called The Water Shortage of New Mexico Can Be an Opportunity. We have Jeff Apodaca in studio. He's a former gubernatorial candidate in the state of New Mexico, son of our former governor, Jerry Apodaca, former Amazing Lobo, former state champion in football at Santa Fe High School. And my friend, appreciate you being here, Jeff.
Formers in there.
That's all good stuff. But you're not talking about former now. We're talking about some really cool nonpartisan perspectives on some projects that would really help everybody and help the state create jobs, all kinds of different things. We'll be back with Jeff Apodaca. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
We're back on ABQ Connect with Jeff Apodaca. Jeff, I know that this is a preliminary proposal. There's how much money does it cost to build plants and all these. There's some data, but
$64 million would cost us to build 4.
Build 4.
To do it perfectly, I would want 11. We could get away with 7, and it's about $500 million.
And we have that money.
We have $89 billion. So I'm talking about $500 million.
And within 3 years, it would be revenue generating.
Let me clarify something. This year, right, and here's the catch 22 or, you know, with New Mexico, when our gas prices at the gas station go up, you know, 10, 15, 20 cents, we're making $53 million, the state is, per dollar. Because for every dollar a barrel that oil goes up, the state makes $58 million per dollar. So if the dollar barrel is trading, this morning it was trading at $73 a barrel. If it goes to $74, we make an extra $58 million.
Wow. Okay.
So my point is, this year alone, oil and gas is probably going to bring in about $8 billion to the state. Projections are, because of the Iraq war and gas prices went up a barrel of oil went up, projections are this coming session, the new governor and the legislator is going to have an additional $850 million. So my point is, take a third of that and let's start the production of these projects, not do more research. Now, Michelle and the legislators in 25 produced a new project and they allocated $40 million to research what I'm talking about. New Mexico Tech has been researching it for years. UTEP, New Mexico State, and New Mexico Tech and Desalination Research Institute of New Mexico in Alamogordo have been there for 20 years.
And you're saying
we don't need more research. We know exactly what we need to do. Texas has gone from 8 to 16 to 53 desalination plants in West Texas in the last 10 years.
Let me ask you about our listeners. They're voters. You and I are voters. You know the Christian community. I kind of get on our case all the time. Only half of us are registered to vote. That's Democrat, Republican, and whatever other flavor you want to talk about. Only half of people that believe in Jesus are registered to vote. And the sad part is, only half of us will actually vote.
Right.
Jeff, call people out. How can we as a community come together, both sides of the aisle, and get this done?
I think we go vote for legislators because it's going to start. Well, first of all, it's a governor. Mm-hmm. And you do not need what I'm proposing. You do not need legislator approval, because what I've heard from people is, those legislators, Democrats, Republicans, you're going to fight the whole time. Progressives aren't going to want to do this. Well, the progressives actually want to do this. And they're the majority in the legislature. My point is, yes, if you go to the legislators to get funding out of there. But let's talk about capital improvement. There's $8 billion sitting around. Well, the governor controls a third of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the new governor literally can do it on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Or him, or his, I should say him on his own, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually talking to both gubernatorial candidates, because not that Michelle doesn't want to do this. Michelle has three to, you know,
she's not around much longer.
She's not around much longer. So let's talk about the new governors coming in. And so I'm talking to Greg and to Deb Haaland and proposing this to them. And Jim, let me just kind of clarify. I am not a water expert.
Right.
Right. I'm a find opportunity expert in business. For the last 40 years, I built companies for CBS Sports, CBS Entertainment, broadcast companies, Univision for 16 years. I started AOL Studios in Los Angeles. And what the board and my CEOs loved about me is I look at a project, I just see revenue streams. Mm-hmm. Right? And in business, you got to create revenue. I don't care. We're all in sales, man. We're all in sales,
mm-hmm.
right? You got to create revenue streams. So I'm really good at that. So I white paper stuff out. And so in 2010, I moved back here. Within 2 years, I literally was disappointed at our state and what we were doing. And I'd been gone for 27 years. And I remember just thinking, I grew up here. I'm 15th generation. My family's been here since 1580.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there going, what has happened to our state? So I started white papering out business opportunities. And at the time, we had the highest unemployment in the country at the time. And so I started white papering out. Even Michelle, our governor, has given me credit on some of the big ideas. In fact, at a legislative luncheon, she said, you know, when I ran against Jeff Apodaca, he was probably the toughest guy I ever ran against. We all kind of made fun of him because he had these big ideas that we didn't believe. When I got in office, I told my staff, let's start looking at just big ideas. We realized, oh, my God, he's on to a lot of good ideas. So they implemented some of it. And the governor has created about 150,000 new jobs. My goal is to create 225 to 250,000 new jobs. I think if you implement these. So my point is I created white papers. So I look at opportunities. So I saw needs in New Mexico. I moved back here in 2010, Jim, Elephant Butte. And we always talk about Elephant Butte. There's other reservoirs around the state.
That are low.
They're all low.
Yeah.
They're all low. But we talk about Elephant Butte because it's the largest. And it's one, at the time, it was the, when it was built, it was the largest in North America. It's one of the largest in the world, or in North America now. And so my point is, when I moved back here in 2010, Lake Mead was at 30%, right? The Colorado River's going down. I just came from L.A. for 20 years. We're desalinating ocean water in three areas in Southern California because we're short of water. And then New Mexico, the Elephant Butte was at 32%. 6 years later, it was at 10%, 12%. And yeah, you get a snowpack, goes up about 8%. But we haven't had a good snowpack. I mean, think about it, Jim. When we were kids, snowpack was 200-300 feet.
Yes.
This year was 55 inches. I mean, 200 or 300 inches. This year was 55 inches.
Well, I think so many times people talk about water related to Wolf Creek ski area.
Right.
How many? Do we have 14 feet? Do we have 10 feet? That's how much water we're going to have to irrigate, right?
And a lot of that water doesn't come here.
Yeah.
That goes to the Colorado River. That goes to California.
Yeah. There you go.
California, Nevada, Arizona is very concerned. And so my point is I white papered out a lot of different industries, and this was one of them. And then I started talking to experts. And when you work in the broadcast business, when you work in the entertainment business, you deal with multiple cities, I've worked in 44 different states, saw how local, state, and federal governments work, see how industries work. I learned a lot about them. And when you're in the broadcast business, you deal with a lot of different industries. So I learned about a lot of different industries for our partners. And that's why everybody always tells me, like, how do you know so much about things? I'm not an expert in stuff, but I just learn stuff, right?
But you know who the experts are, and that's who you talk to. Yeah, and you depend on them.
And so here's like another example that we haven't talked about. So we talk about oil and gas all the time. Well, people don't realize, because I talk to people all the time, they're like, I didn't know that. So people think oil and gas, you know, we drill down, we hit a pool of oil and, you know, Beverly Hillbillies, you know, oil's bubbling. That's not our oil, man. That's Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Our oil's in water and in dirt and in rock. So we frack, we bring it up. When we bring up the oil, what we bring up is only about 25% of oil. It's about 6% natural gas. The rest is water, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 60 to 70% water, and it's brackish water.
And right now they have to pump it back into
literally
the brine pool.
And they go 10, 12,000 feet deep. And they put it back in the brine pool. So the same aquifers we're talking about, oil and gas already has a lot of them drilled. So we can even just start off in the Southeast and go to the oil and gas guys and say the oil and gas guys are producing 31 billions a gallon of brackish water a year, and they're pumping it back into the ground. Wow. So my point is, we could just, and by the way, the number one investor into desalination and renewables and cleaning water in Texas, Chevron, Texaco.
The oil and gas guys.
The oil and gas guys.
Because there is a revenue stream for them.
Absolutely.
There.
And by the way, when I say private-public partnerships, a third of the money, let's say we start off with $240 million. My proposal, and I've already talked to Senator Ben Ray Lujan about it, my proposal would be a third comes from the state, a third comes from the federal government, from grants, and a third comes from the private sector. And we have the private sector invest with us. And why would I say that? That's what California does. That's what New York does. And that's what Texas is doing. And private sector is running desalination plants and making money with the state government. And that's what I'm saying is we can go get federal grants, right? Ben Ray's all behind it. We go get federal grants to pay a third. We have money. We talked about the $89 billion. So if we took a third, we're literally, and let's say we did the whole, you know, the whole $500 million proposal. That means the state would come up with about $175 million.
Jeff, let's take another break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about, you've proposed four plants.
To start off with.
Little higher volume desalination than maybe we see in Texas per plant. But I want to talk about where those would be located initially. And again, this is just a thinking proposal. There's a lot of details to be worked out. Jeff Apodaca with us today. He has written an op-ed in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. It was written on the 25th. You can access it there. And he's talking about when we see a water crisis in New Mexico and an empty Elephant Butte, he sees an opportunity and believes that there's a real opportunity not only to replenish the water we need, but also to generate a revenue stream and jobs and all kinds of good things for the state of New Mexico. We'll be back with Jeff Apodaca right after these messages.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect.
Jeff Apodaca is with us today. Jeff, I've appreciated you. A lot of our listeners don't realize that in addition to being the governor's son and being state champion in football and all the accomplishments you've had in business, which are significant, this is an opportunity you've outlined for the state. That's another great business opportunity, the way I look at it. But you're also a cancer survivor. God's kept you here for some reason.
Some reason, right? I tell people all the time, I don't think I'm going to get hit by a bus, because I think if God was going to take me, he would have taken me at 17, and he's kept me here for a reason. So there's a purpose to maybe just stir the pot, upset people. I don't know.
Jeff, how have you maintained so much positivity? Is it because of the people surrounding you that lift you up?
I think it's my faith. Number one, I think it's my faith. I had sons later in life, so it's definitely, you know, when you have kids, man, you look at life a lot different.
Yes.
You know? And so, my DNA is about giving back and helping people and thinking of the greater cause, the greater good. I've had a knack in business to find revenue streams or find better ways to do things, and then I just simplify them and streamline it. And so I'm this white paper I've had to create 225,000 new jobs. I'm talking to both gubernatorial candidates because in New Mexico, the governor can do a lot. And the governor, some of the things that we're talking about, the governor chairs the board of the State Investment Council, right? That means the State Investment Council board basically can determine where to invest this money. And I'm not saying take all our money. We have $76 billion in investment funds. I'm not saying spend a dime. I'm saying invest a portion of that into these type of programs. And you can invest this, you know, you can create a loan program with some of that money and pay back, because the constitutionally we can't spend it, but we can invest it. And you know what the state constitution says about a return on your investment?
No.
Try and make a return.
Try to make a return?
Try and make a return. Really, that's what it says. Try and make a return. So my point is, you don't have to make, and the State Investment Council, the former executive director would tell me, well, Jeff, I could make more money investing it in Wall Street. Absolutely. But spend 95% of that money there, but put 5% of that money working for the state of New Mexico, working for the people of New Mexico, starting jobs and solving problems for New Mexico. We have plenty of money to do education and other things. I'm talking about economic growth. I'm talking about verticals that are going to create jobs, high-paying jobs, engineering jobs that are tied with New Mexico Tech, that are tied to our bio research, that are tied to building materials and industries. Jim, we're already doing research here at New Mexico State, UTEP, and New Mexico Tech.
You know, people don't realize New Mexico Tech, Jeff, has been rated by some rating organizations as number one in the country.
It's the MIT of the Southwest.
Yeah, they really know what they're doing, not only in oil and gas, but in produced water.
Well, and these reports I'm talking about, where the brackish water is, they're all from New Mexico Tech.
So where do we start? You want to build four initially. Where's the first one? In Hobbs?
Well, I've always said it'd be simple to go down to the southeast part of the state. And the reason I say that is, and this is what I've been told by oil and gas guys, so I'm just going off what they've told me. They have 4 to 6, you know, pipeline drilled holes, 10 to 12,000 feet to these brackish pools that they're pumping the brackish water from oil and gas.
So those are already there.
They're already there.
Okay. Right?
And so let me kind of put it in perspective. Where do the four go? There are 14. And if you can go, I don't know if you want to, I sent you the map. So you can go, right. You can Google it, look at New Mexico Tech. But then the last maps are from 23. But there's 14. Yes, some of the.
There are 14 brine pools.
Brine pools. Okay. And they're anywhere. So just so everybody knows, the freshwater aquifers are basically 300 to 500 feet deep. The brackish is anywhere from 800 to 12,000 feet deep.
Okay.
So let's say we got to go to 12,000 feet. Whew, Jeff, that's a long way to go. Yeah, it takes about 3 months. Literally, it takes about 3 months. Okay. But we can get to some of the brine, some of the brackish water within 1,000 feet, within, 5,000 feet. Some are overlapping. So my point is, let's look at the engineers and let's stay away, because the brackish pools are much larger than the freshwater pools. Mm-hmm. So let's stay away from drilling through the freshwater pools to the brackish pools. Let's stay away from that. So that would eliminate 4 or 5 areas. But even at that area, there's 3 huge aquifers between here, Grants, Gallup, and Blinn. Mm. Okay, 3 or 4. But if you look at it, there's 2 huge ones in the northwest. They're all over the state. But my proposal is, let's just start in the southeast because they're already producing 98 billion gallons of water, brackish water a year just by oil and gas fracking. Let's clean that water up. And let's tap into their wells and partner with them. Let's just start there. But my point is, I want to put it around the I-25 corridor in some of the rural areas, one, creating jobs and opportunities there. Mm-hmm. But then also, that's where we can tap into the Rio Grande, that we can tap into other streams to get it to the reservoirs. And then we have to come up with a way how to get that water, because I want to sell half of it. We got to work out with the federal government and other states, how do we basically head it west and send it to the west? And there are Colorado River, there are things there that we can basically tap into, and there's got to be some construction here. So I tell people all the time, we don't have a water shortage, we have an infrastructure shortage. And that's what we really need to focus on.
So, Jeff, if you save half of the water for use by New Mexicans, let's talk about farmers up and down the Rio Grande Valley. Would the farmers have to pay a premium for this? Because a lot of them don't have any money.
No, it's the same. No, because we could send it to the reservoirs. We can send it to Elephant Butte, the green chili farmers, the pecan farmers. Mm. And keep in mind, too, a lot of them had drilled their own wells because they just don't trust the freshwater river anymore.
Sure.
But my point is, we load those up. And again, 25% we use immediately. And we can use those for the cities. And you can use it. And again, once you clean the water, it's drinkable. But if the environmentalists are afraid of the drinking the water, then the point is, all right, then let's use it for yards. Let's use it for golf courses. Let's use it for cities and for sewer. Right? And let's use it for agriculture. And then we put the other 25%, let's start pumping it into the reservoirs that we're going to use. 75% of the water use in our state today is for agriculture. Mm. So let's do that. And then keep in mind, we got these compacts. It's new water. Doesn't say what kind of water we have to send them. We can send them some of this water. But the other part is, let's take 50% of that and sell it to 3 western, 4 western states that are short of water, and they're panicking in the next 20 years. They're going to run out of water. Phoenix is going to run out of water in 20 years if the environment doesn't change. And again, we talked about it earlier. I don't care if you believe in climate change or not. Sandia, the experts are telling me Texas West, and you're seeing it across the board, all the water, all the floods are coming from East Texas and the Southeast and the East Coast. Texas West, all the way to the Northwest, we're in a 100-year drought, and we're in year 16. So we got 24, 20 more, we got 80 to 20, you know, 80 to 84 more years of this. So my point is we can start solving it today, but if we sit around and start complaining and we sit around and talk about conserving, you know, the other day I heard some of our legislators say, well, let's hope we get a good snowpack next year. Hope's not a good strategy, Jim.
No. And Jeff, you're talking about us taking the initiative, recognizing an opportunity where a lot of people are running scared. You see an opportunity. It seems an amazing opportunity for jobs, for revenue creation, for servicing the needs of New Mexicans for water. What I like most about it is, you've already stated this, you have brought into your op-ed on the 25th of this month in the Santa Fe New Mexican, people can access the articles called "The Water Shortage of New Mexico Can Be an Opportunity." You're quoting the experts.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I just appreciate that because this has been well-researched. You're taking advantage of research that's been done 30 plus years by some of the top academic institutions, research like New Mexico Tech.
And Jim, I didn't just come up with this. I actually white papered this out in 2010, that's 16 years ago, started pitching this in 2012, and then it was part of my economic plan when I ran for governor in 18. And then it's just kind of, you know, everybody keeps talking about it, it's just gone nowhere. So now we have a new election coming up. And again, to credit Michelle's administration, they have in 2025, with the lead of George Munoz, the state senator from Gallup, they have created a $40 million fund to do more research and look at desalination. And my point is, we've done enough research. We've been researching this for 20 years. Mm. Texas is already doing it. Israel's already doing it. California's already doing it. And they've been doing it for 50 years, Jim. This isn't new.
Yeah.
And by the way, folks, we have a desalination research institute in Alamogordo. And we have a small desalination plant that they're testing stuff out. It's been there for 20 years.
Yeah.
So my point is, it's time to start researching. We know exactly what we need to do. We know the technology. And until we start doing it, and again, the reason I'm a business guy. I always look at revenue streams. We're going to spend $1 billion. How do we make $6 billion?
Mm.
Well, we're going to spend, if we do it the right way, we're going to spend $500 million. Now, I believe a third can come from the federal government grants that we don't have to pay back. We have $80 billion sitting around, so we use a portion of that. And then the private sector will come in and invest with us, and we have the private sector run it. And so the private sector makes a chunk of money, right? Makes a third. We make two thirds. But the state's generating about $655 million a year in revenue. And those are low projections, by the way.
Sure.
I personally think within 3 to 5 years, we can get that revenue up to $1 billion in new revenue a year by basically cleaning our brackish water. Again, look at resources that we have. We have oil and gas resources. We have the largest aquifers in North America right here in the state of New Mexico. We have 14. The number two state is Texas, and they're tapping into theirs. They have 53 now. They have 4. Arizona's next. They have 2. We have 14.
Wow.
We have enough brackish water down there. If we pump up the amount I'm talking about and it's half the use of what we use today and then we sell it, we're talking enough water to last. The experts are telling me, and their reports are, 1,280 years.
Love it.
Brackish water down there. And again, we keep pumping it up, sending it out west. On the years we do get more snowpack, you know, we can slow down the proposal. We can slow down the desalination. But again, my proposal is, let's start with the oil and gas guys. The oil and gas guys, they're producing 31 billion gallons of brackish water already, and then they're pumping it back down there into their wells. They've already gone to the pools. So my point is, let's just start with the oil and gas guys.
Love it. Jeff, I apologize. We're out of time.
No,
you,
Jim,
and I could talk for another 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, we can do this all the time.
But appreciate you being here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Brett. Appreciate for having me.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.